In your field of research, what has been the common discourse surrounding infrastructure development in the Western Sydney region?
Well, over the last 10 years, it's been the lack of infrastructure development in Western Sydney. I think more recently, it's been the issue of the concentration on transportation infrastructure, particularly on the development of motorways. And that's obviously not sustainable. So there's a concern about how do we properly configure public transport configurations.
So following that, do you think that infrastructure spending hasn't really addressed the concerns of the community that efficiently in regards to public transportation?
Sydney's population growth at the moment is 2 or 3 times its historical average, and we haven't had the public transport infrastructure built in the places that is needed, so people have obviously resorted to their motor vehicles. So the recent infrastructure expenditures, such as in last Tuesday night's budget, is on things to fix up road transportation, to bust congestion, as they've been saying. So we've got ourselves into a situation where we actually do now need to spend on road transport to ease the problem while we wait for public transportation to be built. So that's the problem we've created. We're allowing these new residential estates vast distances away from the city centre, and those professional workers that actually do rely upon CBD employment because there's inattention to the development of professional jobs elsewhere in Western Sydney. It's quite mind-boggling that that's the way we're designing a city in the second decade of the 21st century.
Just following that, how does the state government really navigate urban trends when developing infrastructure? How do they kind of anticipate these patterns when they are doing future planning?
Well, I think the problem is that the pressure on the state government from landowners at the moment is to produce quick value uplift. And the quickest way that a person who owns a lot of land on the edge of the city to get a lot of value out of it is to have it rezoned as residential. And we don't seem to have any pressure to stop that happening. Now, where people live only becomes a problem if it's a long way from where they work. So what we're doing is releasing a lot of land for new residential estates, but paying almost zero attention to the development of big agglomerations of jobs that are near to where people live. And of course, that makes the public transportation task easier. If you have concentrations of jobs near to where people live, then it's a hell of a lot easier to build light rail or buses or so on to connect them, which of course is exactly what happens in the CBD. We have a giant concentration of jobs, and it's not surprising that people cluster in denser configurations of residential areas around the CBD. And overwhelmingly, the people who work in Sydney CBD go by train and bus.
And you mentioned that infrastructure is chasing urban growth. The root cause of this is that infrastructure spending should steer urban growth, but in actual fact, it's doing the complete opposite at the moment. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Look, I think there's a bit of a mantra around that infrastructure steers urban growth, and that's sort of true. But it's more true when you say that infrastructure and jobs concentration steer urban growth. Often in the past, we've had a concentration of jobs in regional centres and then residential areas spring up around them, and then you can connect by rail, light rail and buses and so on. What we don't have in Sydney at the moment is an attention to concentration of jobs, because that's very hard. If you've got such glorious CBD like Sydney with beaches along its eastern edge and a harbour right down through the middle, it's very easy to attract enterprises to come into that beautiful location and coexist with all the other enterprises. The funny thing is about most cities of the world don't have a beautiful harbour and beautiful beaches, but they do have successful concentrations of jobs. Now, a lot of that occurs because governments make considerable effort to actually making places amenable to commerce. And what we don't have in Western Sydney is that sort of serious attention by governments to do the things that are needed to build those giant jobs concentrations, not just in Parramatta, but in Liverpool and in Campbelltown and in Blacktown and Penrith and the other regional centres of Western Sydney. Now, unless you do that as an urban planning project, then really public transport has no job to do, because there's no destination for public transport to be built, no destination for it to arrive at. At the moment, we're very good at building origins, places where people live, but when they get up in the morning, their jobs are scattered everywhere.
And have there been any talks about those type of urban projects that are trying to build that job concentration?
I suppose the good thing about the Greater Sydney Commission is that it has acknowledged the problem, and there is now in a number of documents the aspiration for 200,000 new professional jobs in what they call the Aerotropolis area, adjacent to Badgerys Creek Airport. Now, there's a couple of problems with that. One is that we're not really sure if we can create 200,000 knowledge jobs in such a location. It takes a big leap of imagination to think that by 2056 there'll be 200,000 professional jobs there. To give you an idea of what that looks like, so the new Barangaroo development in Sydney will create 25,000 jobs. So in other words, an Aerotropolis in the outer southwest of Sydney would have to be the equivalent of 8 Barangaroos, and we have to build those 8 Barangaroos by 2056. So it's a mammoth task. So certainly there's government awareness now of the size of the task, but as yet governments really aren't, I don't think, aware enough of how difficult a task it is and what they need to be doing in order to generate jobs.
The Infrastructure Australia's priority list, have they used job concentration as a priority when tackling that list?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting question. When Infrastructure Australia was established in 2007-08, you know, it would be fair to say that the Infrastructure Australia now operates more on a business evaluation model. What are the real and implied monetary benefits that you would get from that investment? And if you discount that through time, will that produce a net present value that makes the whole project worthwhile? So we really do have a business management approach to decision-making about infrastructure rather than a broader city building approach.
And I guess that goes hand in hand with the whole public-private sector relationship that is really in a lot of these infrastructure projects.
That's true, and I mean, it's always an issue in the Australian federal system in that federal government is always paramount when you need infrastructure built because they're the ones with the deepest pockets. But the major builders of infrastructure are the state governments. But of course, the third player in the 21st century in infrastructure is the private sector. So we have a new problem, which is that we need to assemble coalitions of federal government, state government, local government, of course, and the private sector. And that's a new thing in human history, and we're not very good at it, and we need to improve the way we do that sort of thing quite quickly, I should think.